This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be with you today. My name is Janet Mufford, sitting in today for Tony, and it is great once again to be with you. And there are so many things going on across the country right now, one of which involves a very, very bad law that was recently signed into law by the Republican governor of Illinois. Just days ago, Bruce Rauner signed into law this measure that shockingly will force pro-life medical personnel and pregnancy resource centers to violate their consciences about abortion. As the Washington Times put it, SB 1564 amends Illinois' Healthcare Right of Conscience Act so as to compel pro-life doctors and clinics to refer patients to healthcare providers who will perform abortions. Now, this was a measure that the pro-life community spent a great deal of effort opposing. So what is going to happen now? We're going to talk it over with Emily Zender, who is the executive director of Illinois Right to Life. And Emily, it's great to have you here. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Janet.
Yeah, now, so tell us about this law that just passed. Everybody was just, you know, jaw-dropping all over the country, all the pro-lifers saying, how in the world could this happen? But what exactly went down with Governor Rauner and this measure?
Well, you know, this bill forces all medical professionals to refer for abortions, to discuss the benefits of abortion. And so if you think about a doctor who has his own private practice, and he's an OBGYN, with a couple who's 5 months pregnant, and if that couple finds out that they have a Down syndrome child, now that doctor is required to say, you have a Down syndrome child, one of your legal treatment options is abortion. And if that couple says, yes, we want abortion, the doctor has to provide them with a list of places that they can get the abortion and tell them the benefits of abortion. That's what our governor just signed into law.
Unbelievable. And also went against the rest of the party, right? Because as I understand it, no Republican lawmaker in Illinois voted for this law.
That is correct. In its final passage, every Republican member voted against this law, leaving Governor Bruce Rauner to side entirely with pro-abortion Democrats.
Wow. And he's the same governor who said he wasn't going to get into social issues, right? When he was making a campaign pledge?
Well, and pro-life people across the state were very conflicted on whether to vote for him when he was running for governor. And he said, I'm going to stay out of, you know, social issues. I'm going to steer clear of them. I'm here to fix the state. And so pro-lifers trusted that. And here he has a bill that he could have easily vetoed. It has many, many problems. And instead, he signs it and now has completely forced pro-lifers to violate their conscience.
It's horrendous. So when you're talking about, for example, a pro-life doctor now being forced to refer for an abortion or give information to a patient about abortion, do they also have the freedom to give the other side, to say to the patient, but you don't have to abort, these are some other options for you, or how much are their hands tied, in other words?
Well, this bill does not say that they cannot say, I disagree with abortion. What it only says is that they must talk about the benefits, and then if the couple or the woman decides she wants an abortion, they have to help her obtain that abortion, help her find a place to get an abortion.
That's...
When we're talking about pregnancy resource centers, these are organizations that are founded to oppose abortion.
Of course.
And help women choose something else. And
yeah.
They're now being forced to participate as well.
Now, take us back a little bit, Emily. Why in the world was this ever put into law? What, obviously, there are pro-abortion forces who wanted it, but what preceded the signing of this measure into law? What was the stated purpose of doing this?
Well, they found a couple who had visited a hospital, and this hospital was Catholic. And so according to this couple, the hospital was not able to give them an abortion, and it put the woman in an intense amount of pain because she was in the process of miscarrying and she wanted an abortion now. And so that's kind of the emotional grab that the pro-abortion business kind of pushed forward to say, this is why we need this bill. Otherwise, they have not been able to present any reason why this bill would be beneficial, because what happened in that particular case is not even a situation that should happen to begin with.
Well, right. The way you were describing it, I thought, if you're miscarrying, why do you need an abortion? You're in the midst of losing the baby. I don't even understand that.
Exactly.
That's strange. Yeah. Well, now, when you look at the effects of this, this will affect, no doubt, thousands of pro-lifers throughout the state. What do you see as the ramifications of this bill being signed into law for the pro-life community?
Well, you know, just a few months before the governor signed the bill into law, it was Sandra Mendoza, a pediatric nurse in Winnebago County in Illinois, and she was a pediatric nurse for 18 years and ended up getting pushed out, forced to resign by the county because she refused to start referring for abortions. And so she is now suing the government, saying, you cannot discriminate against me like that. And that's what we're going to see more of. We're going to see more doctors, more nurses that are being pushed out of health care or being punished because they don't want to participate in the dismembering of a human person.
That's horrible. Now, doesn't this violate federal law, though? I've read several places references to the Coates-Snow Amendment, which says apparently that state and local governments that get federal funds cannot discriminate against healthcare entities that refuse to provide abortion referrals or arrangements. So isn't this a direct violation of a federal law that's already in place?
That's what we understand it to be. We had bipartisan congressmen write a letter to the General Assembly saying this puts into jeopardy your federal funding. This violates not only the Coates-Snow Amendment, the Church Amendment. There's several others that it could be violating. So this is just really bad law to begin with. It was poorly written. It's now going to be poorly executed. And so this is something that lawmakers need to take a serious look at, whether or not we're going to actually jeopardize our federal funding over this.
Right. Well, you guys delivered, what was it, about 6,000 names to object to the signing of this law to no avail?
That's correct. You know, I have to say, I've never seen the Illinois pro-life movement come out so strong as they did against this bill, with people writing letters to the editors, signing petitions, calling the governor's office. I mean, this was one of only two bills that the governor's office had right on their website where you could easily find it and find information about it because they were getting so many calls. So it's really quite shocking that the governor did sign this in the end.
Yeah, it is. So how many people could this potentially affect? Emily, when you look across the state, there are a lot of pro-life doctors, there are a lot of pro-life nurses, a lot of, obviously, in the pregnancy resource centers, these are all pro-lifers. So how many people are in jeopardy now of having to violate their consciences? And do you expect that they will all comply? Because knowing pro-lifers as I do, I can imagine a fair number of them are going to say, I'm not going to do this.
Right. You know, that the full effect of this bill is still going to be unknown. We've been promised lawsuits by ADF, by Thomas More Society, to try and vindicate these pro-life heroes who are going to stand up against this bill. We have about 100 pregnancy resource centers in Illinois that this affects. And we know that about 91% of faith-based medical professionals say they'd rather not practice their medical practice, they'd rather leave than be forced to violate their conscience.
Oh my.
And so what we're going to see is less doctors, higher costs, longer wait times, and all of this stuff here in Illinois is going to affect the everyday person, not just the pro-lifer.
Yeah, and not to mention the litigation that it probably will be launched against the state of Illinois, which can ill afford to defend litigation as broke as the state. I say this as a native of Illinois, as broke as the state is. How in the world are they going to come up with the funds to defend all the lawsuits that surely are going to follow?
It's very true. We have much bigger issues here. Like, for example, no Planned Parenthood in Illinois is licensed, nor has it been inspected by the state of Illinois since 1999.
Ooh.
And they do abortions up to 20 weeks. They insert surgical tools into women's bodies, and they are not licensed or inspected. And so we have much bigger issues, financial issues, this issue that our political leaders should be taking care of. And instead, they're getting in the weeds and forcing pro-lifers to violate their sincerely held religious beliefs.
It's awful. It's awful. Well, and from what I understand, there was already a court case, if I'm remembering this correctly, with Illinois pharmacists who actually won a case over conscience and being forced to violate their conscience. So it looks like if this is the case, there could be some very good precedent for having success in the courts.
That's correct. And the state actually had to pay attorney's fees in that case in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. So we're not sure how this law is going to affect the laws that they were able to use to protect the pharmacists, and that's what litigation is going to have to decide. But, you know, I really have to say, as a woman, I'm offended that political leaders think that women are too unintelligent to find an abortion clinic on our own in the age of Google and smartphones.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, I didn't know abortion was an option. I'm a pregnant. I mean, who in the world doesn't know abortion isn't an option who lives in the United States?
Exactly. This has been 40-some years now that we have had this as an issue, and it's nothing new to every Illinoisan here.
Well, are you giving any tips of any kind to pro-lifers who are affected by this on how to obey the law, not that you should necessarily obey the law, but to comply but still be able to hold on to your conscience? Is there any in-between route at all in the interim between now and when litigation is actually filed?
You know, we are looking into all of the potential options and trying to help those in that particular circumstance. The law is so poorly written that we are unclear if we can say, you want an abortion, there is a phone book on the table if you need additional services. And so that would suffice. Or if they have to provide a list of the abortion clinics with their contact information. So when we had asked different representatives and co-sponsors for clarification when the bill was being debated, they contradicted each other. They said different things. So nobody actually understands the extent of what this law is going to do. So we're going to say, you know, we can practice it as little as possible until we get sued or somebody says you have to do otherwise.
Yeah. So this doesn't take effect, though, till January, right?
That's correct. So pregnancy resource centers, doctors, you have plenty of time to talk to attorneys, you know, reach out to us. We're always happy to help and support you and try and figure out in what ways can we not violate our conscience and still follow this law to the point where they're not going to lose their medical license.
Right. Well, what do you think pro-lifers really should do at this point, those throughout Illinois who are not only the medical personnel or the people working in the pregnancy resource centers, but also the rank-and-file pro-lifers who say, we have to fight back here. What can I do as a citizen to be able to stand up to Governor Rauner and to these legislators who passed this horrific piece of legislation?
I would tell medical professionals that there is a reason Planned Parenthood is coming after you. It's because medical professionals know the truth about life, and they know that science is pro-life. And they want all pro-life people out of the medical industry because that is, in the end, who's going to stand up and prove Planned Parenthood wrong.
Yeah.
The fact that they're coming after you, don't lose hope. Just stand up, be strong, and say, I'm not going to comply with this law. And for those who are not medical professionals, I would say I continue to urge you to reach out to Governor Rauner. Let him know your frustrations. Be respectful, but let him know that you disagree. And then you have a decision to make when he runs for governor. Are you going to vote for him again? That's something that this is going to play a huge role in.
Absolutely. Well, and as we've seen from big abortion, there's never a line. They always push the line and then they want something more. So if they get their way on this, who knows what comes next? And that's why it's so important to stand up for life and for the freedom of conscience right now. Well, Emily Zender, Executive Director of Illinois Right to Life, it was great to have you here, Emily. I really appreciate the update and we'll be praying for you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. Janet Mefford in for Tony Perkins, 866-372-7234. We'll be taking your calls a little later on this hour. Just keep that number handy, 866-372-7234. You're listening to Washington Watch. We'll be going to a break and coming back right after this on American Family Radio.
Dear friends, do not be surprised at the painful trial you are suffering, as though something strange were happening to you.
American pastor Saeed Abedini was arrested in his native Iran in 2012 while building a government.
Remember those in prison as if you were their fellow prisoners, and those who are mistreated as if you yourselves were suffering.
An army chaplain was punished for discussing matters of faith and quoting from the Bible.
For it is commendable if a man bears up under the pain of unjust suffering because he is conscious of God.
Black lives matter! Black lives matter!
Finally, all of you live in harmony with one another. Be sympathetic. Love as brothers. Be compassionate and humble, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving.
God's word is true and applies to our lives today. An encouragement from the American Family Association.
Jan Harper, wife of Pastor Bert Harper.
Sometimes it feels like I'm living in a fishbowl. You know what I mean? When your husband is a church leader, your family is constantly being watched. That's why we offer the AFA Pastor and Wife Fishbowl Retreat. And our guest speaker this year is American Family Radio's J.J. Jasper.
I'm very excited to be a speaker, and I'll be sharing comedy at this year's Fishbowl Retreat. I'm especially excited that my wife, Melanie, will minister to the pastor's wives. When speaking at women's events, she shares, if Satan can discourage you, he can defeat you.
If you could use 3 days and two nights of relaxation among people who understand your challenges, then join us for the AFA Pastor and Wife Fishbowl Retreat.
This year's retreat is scheduled for October 4th through 6th at the Linden Valley Conference Center in Tennessee. Get details at repairingthefoundations.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 300.
And we'll see you there.
Did you know there's an approved healthcare choice just for Christians that's founded on the timeless principles in God's Word? It's not insurance. It's MediShare. Over 189,000 believers across America who love God and share each other's healthcare bills. It's about half the cost of health insurance, and you never pay for medical practices that go against your Christian beliefs. Best of all, the healthcare law includes a special provision for MediShare members, so you don't have to buy insurance or face penalties. MediShare is affordable healthcare without compromise.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
We are back on Washington Watch. Janet Mefford in today for Tony Perkins. Glad you're here. 866-372-7234, our toll-free number, and we will take your calls a little bit later on this hour. But today, a federal judge dismissed a lawsuit that was brought by Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore. Justice Moore, as you may recall, was suspended from the bench back in May after the Alabama Judicial Inquiry Commission filed judicial ethics charges against him pertaining to an administrative order to probate judges. Justice Moore was trying to overturn that suspension, but he never ordered the probate judges to disregard the Obergefell decision, as this commission is claiming, and he's going to go before the Judicial Inquiry Commission in a hearing on Monday addressing these charges against him. I know there are a lot of moving parts to this case, but it is a critical case for Christians to understand and to follow closely, especially because the Southern Poverty Law Center also plays a part in what has been going on. So we're going to get more details now from Justice Moore's attorney, Matt Staver, who is founder and chairman of Liberty Council. And Matt, it's great to have you here. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Janet. And you did an excellent job overviewing this, because there are two different tracks that are going on simultaneously, and you got it exactly right.
Oh, well, that's good to know. Wiping the sweat from my brow, Matt, because it is complicated. And a lot of people say, all right, I know Justice Moore. I remember the Ten Commandments monument. And I know he's been a stalwart defender of marriage and will stand up for the right thing. But what is the latest thing here? Tell us a little bit about what's been going on with this lawsuit dismissal, stemming back to what has happened with this commission.
Yeah, let me just talk about what happened today. You got a federal court decision that abstained from hearing the matter. Now, the matter that was before the federal court is very limited. It's not the underlying charge. It's this automatic removal provision that Alabama has. It's the only state in the country that has this. And that is, when a judge is charged with, no matter what the charge is, no matter how trivial, that judge is automatically removed from the bench.
Wow.
And you're removed from the bench until you go through the hearing and you ultimately prevail. Now, there's history where a previous judge, in a completely different situation, had been charged. He got removed from the bench. His case dragged on for 2 years, and he finally decided to just simply retire. I mean, this changes the whole judiciary and essentially says that you're guilty until proven innocent. So on Friday afternoon, he got the charge. On Monday, he's removed from the bench. It's very disruptive. So the complaint that we filed in the federal court was to strike down that automatic removal provision. I can tell you what, we are still pursuing that with another justice who also has a complaint filed against him, not a charge, but a complaint by the same Southern Poverty Law Center for a comment that he made on a radio program critical of the Obergefell decision of its legal reasoning. They filed the complaint. Now, the charge hasn't been filed, but if the charge is filed, he'll also be automatically removed. So we have a separate charge, separate complaint in court. It's not going to have this, what they call abstention doctrine, where the federal court gives deference to an ongoing state proceeding, as in this case. The other case doesn't have an ongoing state proceeding with this other associate justice. So we're planning to get that removed at some point in the time.
Okay.
Now, what we're also doing is on Monday, we're going to the state court, the Court of the Judiciary, to challenge the underlying charges that was brought by the Judicial Inquiry Commission. And you're right. They focused in this charge on a January 2016 administrative order. It's four pages. Anyone can read it. It's very easy to read. And they say that he advocated that the probate judges disobey the U.S. Supreme Court decision. Well, he never said that. In fact, he said the opposite. He said specifically, I cannot give guidance to the probate judges because the matter is currently pending before the Alabama Supreme Court, and that court will make a ruling at some point in the future, which it did 2 months later.
Good grief. So even though the basis for the complaint was completely spurious, he gets removed or suspended from the bench without being able to have any due process.
That's exactly right. And so here's the scenario. Southern Poverty Law Center files the complaint based upon this administrative order. And then there's people on the Judicial Inquiry Commission that are in league with the Southern Poverty Law Center, so they issue a charge. Now, it matters now how bogus it is. It doesn't really matter because he automatically is removed from the bench. And then we have to go through the process of litigating it to get him back on the bench. Well, then the Judicial Inquiry Committee or Commission is kind of like a grand jury, if you will. But then after it issues the charge, then it hires the former legal director of the Southern Poverty Law Center to prosecute the Chief Justice. So the Southern Poverty Law Center files the complaint, the GIC issues the charge, then the GIC issues a former legal director of the Southern Poverty Law Center to be the prosecutor in the case. So this is how twisted this system is and how entwined the Southern Poverty Law Center is in this Judicial Inquiry Commission. They can file a complaint, and then no matter how bogus it is, if the JIC doesn't like the judge, they issue the charge, and they're off the bench. So they've not only targeted the Chief Justice, they're also now having their sights on another state Supreme Court Justice, Tom Parker.
Oh, man. And the JIC has no jurisdiction to render legal decisions, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you're exactly right. Whenever a Chief Justice issues an administrative order, there is one particular body that has jurisdiction over it, and that is the rest of the other eight justices on the Alabama Supreme Court. In fact, in the past, they've actually exercised that authority. A few years ago, in 2013, there was a financial crisis in Alabama, and the Chief Justice issued an administrative order regarding pay raises and freezing the pay raises. Well, guess what? The other eight justices didn't like that. So they overruled that particular administrative order, and they said, that order applies to everyone except for us. Well, they have the right to do that. That's their authority. That's right. How it's set up.
Right.
The Judicial Inquiry Committee doesn't have the right to do it. They're acting as a super state Supreme Court judge that has the authority over the entire judicial system. That's not their role. In fact, three of the members of this nine-member body are non-lawyers. So they don't even have any training in law. And yet they're now focused on administrative order that is solely focused on law and is solely under the jurisdiction of the Alabama Supreme Court as a whole.
Incredible. Well, there's a lot more to talk about. We're going to do that with Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel discussing this case with Justice Roy Moore of Alabama. We're going to come back on Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. Janet Mefford in today for Tony. Again, our number 866-372-7234. Taking your calls a little later on this hour. We'll be coming back on American Family Radio right after this.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Should bankruptcy be an option for a Christian? Well, here's what bankruptcy was designed for. Bankruptcy was designed strictly as a last resort, number one. We know what the Bible says about our obligations to pay our debtors. Regardless of how you feel about that debt, regardless of how big it is, regardless of how long you've had it, you have an obligation to pay the debtor. That, I guess you could call, a consequence to the choice that you've made, and you can't just walk away from it. Now, having said that, there are dire situations. I have talked to folks that have had hospital bills beyond their control, other situations that weren't necessarily a choice that they made, but they've become somewhat of a victim of consequence that they could not have avoided. And bankruptcy has its place, but only as a last resort. I never want to say to somebody, suffer to the point of losing everything that you have if the letter of the law will allow you to work something out by way of a bankruptcy court. But it should never, ever be the first resort. Not in your mind, but from a biblical perspective. You need to make sure that you have exhausted every possible thing. And when you, if you were to ever choose bankruptcy, it's got to be chosen with a heart and a mindset that you have learned from these mistakes, and it's never going to happen again before you were to ever enter in to a bankruptcy situation.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Janet Mefford in today for Tony Perkins. So glad you could join us. Our number 866-372-7234. We'll be taking your calls right after we finish up with Matt Staver. And this is such an important story. It has to do with Roy Moore, who is the Alabama Chief Justice, suspended because he had this ethics complaint lodged against him by this commission. It's all very complex. But the bottom line, Matt, is that this goes back to the question of whether or not states have the right to make their own laws about marriage, and how the U.S. Supreme Court in the Obergefell decision made the decision for the states. There's so many legal issues here, but give us a broader perspective, if you would, on why this matters so much, especially for Christians and those who want to hold to the natural and normal view of marriage.
Well, I think it really matters for Christians because this particular landscape that has been changed by five people on the U.S. Supreme Court regarding marriage is cultural shifting. It is a cataclysmic shifting of the culture when five people say that the Constitution requires states to recognize same-sex marriage. Not only violates the Constitution, but it also violates natural law and the natural created order and millennia of human history. Moreover, when you say that the whole definition of spouse has changed, think about it in your state statutes. You're talking about hundreds and thousands, frankly, of statutes in every state that are affected by that snap decision by five people. So you can't just simply walk away and say this is a small decision. It changes the landscape. It shreds every part of our domestic law regarding workers' compensation, spousal death benefits, who's a spouse, or distribution of property upon a death to a spouse, who's a spouse? The statutes define the spouse as someone who's a man or woman in a legal marriage, and it changes everything. Moreover, not only that, it has a direct collision with religious freedom, and that's the case of Kim Davis, where because of her religious conscience, she was thrown in jail for 6 days. Now, to benefit of the Kentucky legislature, they unanimously passed a law in Kentucky that accommodates religious freedom. But North Carolina did the same thing. North Carolina passed a law that accommodated religious freedom, and groups like the ACLU are all up in arms, and they have a lawsuit against it. They don't want anyone's religious freedom and conscience to be accommodated. So this doesn't just affect the florist and the baker and the photographer, not just the clerks. It affects everyone. Everyone is going to be affected by this 5-4 opinion from the Supreme Court, whether it's churches and tax exemption, property tax exemption, use of facilities, performance of weddings, who you can hire, colleges and accreditation, student loans, you name it. And we're going to be affected by it. So I think it's time for people to push back. And I think, frankly, more than marriage being on trial, I think the entire judiciary is on trial. It's about time for people to say, enough is enough, that judges have to operate within their prescribed limited authority. And when they operate outside of it, we've got to push back.
Well, right. And you look at a complaint like this where the Southern Poverty Law Center is involved. And as people well know, the Southern Poverty Law Center likes to go against Christians and call them hate groups like the Family Research Council. This is what it really comes down to, is that if you are seen as some sort of a threat to the agenda that they want to push forward, then they will find a means to make you have to be confronted and possibly lose your job. And that is the overarching problem as well. It's not just a matter of,
that's right,
yeah, if you're a Christian and sometimes this is going to affect you, but also the targeting aspect. That to me is one of the most disturbing parts of this.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They, like in Chief Justice position, they don't want you to be a judge. They don't want you to be the Chief Justice. I think it's in Oregon right now, if you don't do same-sex weddings, then it's an ethical violation for you to be a judge.
Wow.
You know, they don't want you to just simply be silent anymore. They want you to be a participant and a promoter. And if
that's
you will
right.
not promote their same-sex LGBT agenda, then not only will you have to get out of your position, of your profession, you name it, counseling, any area, but you're going to be fined and you're going to be penalized. And that's what this is about with Chief Justice Roy Moore. Why did they come after him? Because his opinions on marriage and the Constitution are well known.
Yes.
He believes in natural marriage like the majority of the American public. He believes in following the Constitution, and the Southern Poverty Law Center hates him.
Right.
So they have people on the inside at the Judicial Inquiry Commission. They know that if they file a complaint, if the JIC issues a charge, no matter how bogus it is, no matter the fact that we'll ultimately win this case, he's automatically removed, and he's been out of office since May, and now we're in the month of August. So, you know, when he was removed, this case came down, this charge came down on a Friday. On Monday, he's locked out of his office. His password is changed. His secretary is taken away. His law clerks are reassigned, and he can't even go to the third floor of the Alabama Supreme Court Judicial Building. I mean, this is just a tragedy. And it's all because of the issue of marriage. That's all it centers around, the issue of marriage. And they want to punish you, and they want to make it so that you cannot even work in your profession if you don't promote their ideology.
Well, I'll tell you what, Matt, I'm so glad that you're fighting on behalf of Justice Moore, and we'll be praying for you as well as for the justice. This is a travesty, and we'll be following this story with great interest. Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel, thank you so much, Matt, for what you do and for being with us today.
Thank you. My pleasure to be with you.
All right. You take care. We're going to go to another break. When we come back, taking your calls, 866-372-7234. That's 866-372-7234. Anything on your mind today? I'll take your call. We'll be coming back on Washington Watch. Janet Mefford in for Tony Perkins. Back in a moment here on American Family Radio.
As an attorney in communist Romania, Virginia Prodan searched for the truth. When she finally found it in the most forbidden book, the Bible, she made it her mission to defend fellow followers of Jesus Christ against unjust persecution. For this, Virginia was kidnapped, beaten, tortured, and placed under house arrest, even coming within seconds of being executed by order of Nicolae Ceaușescu, the Romanian dictator. Virginia Prodan's extraordinary courage, her search for truth, and her defiance in the face of evil is the subject of a riveting talk that she delivered at FRC's headquarters in Washington, D.C., marking the release of her memoir, Saving My Assassin. Visit frc.org/Romania to listen to her account, as well as the disturbing parallels she sees between attacks on religious liberty in Romania during the 1980s and what is happening in America today. That's frc.org/Romania.
You slip away for a weekend of relaxation, but wake up to find yesterday's scratchy throat feels like a fiery furnace. Your weekend could be up in flames, but for MD Live, 24/7 access to board-certified physicians anywhere. MD Live is used by major corporations and the American Family Association to augment employee health care benefits. Information to determine whether MD Live makes sense for you is available at hcbenefits.com. hcbenefits.com.
What are students saying about Wesley Biblical Seminary? Here's Pastor Jack Marshall.
As a pastor, I feel like I've been enabled to share gems with my congregation. I've been challenged with every course that I've had. They've opened up the scriptures.
I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary. Come and be a part of our community.
Apply today at wbs.edu. Wesley Biblical Seminary. Discover the difference.
As Christians, we occasionally need to retreat from the culture war for a time of renewal. The American Family Association invites you to retreat with us to the mountains of North Carolina, October 3rd through 6th, for the annual AFA Retreat at the Cove. Speakers at this year's event will include AFA President Tim Wildman, Governmental Affairs Director Sandy Rios, Messianic Jewish Apologist Dr. Michael Brown, Marquis Laughlin, founder of Acts of the Word Ministries, and more. As in years past, we'll gather at the Billy Graham Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina. Capacity is limited to 400 participants, so make your plans to attend soon. Get more information at afafoundation.net. Register by calling 800-950-2092, option 2, followed by option 1. It's the annual Retreat at the Cove, October 3rd through 6th, in the beautiful Smoky Mountains of North Carolina.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Janet Mefford in today for Tony Perkins. And I'm delighted that you could join us. 866-372-7234 is our toll-free number. Again, 866-372-7234. So we have been tackling a number of issues today. One having to do with the law that was recently passed in Illinois, signed into law just a few days ago by the Republican governor, of all people, going against everybody in his own party and deciding that he was going to sign on to this law that would violate the consciences of pro-life doctors, medical personnel, and pregnancy resource centers employees, which is absolutely insane on many, many levels. It's insane on the level of freedom, the kind of country we're supposed to be, and even out of line with federal law that says that federal and state government, that, you know, the state governments in particular, like Illinois, that take federal funding, cannot discriminate against health entities on the issue of conscience and not wanting to participate in abortion. So they're going to have lawsuits. They're going to have financial ramifications that come about because of passing this stupid piece of legislation. Why in the world would you want to force pro-lifers to go against their conscience? Because they can. Because this is pro-abortion's game. This is the whole push by Planned Parenthood. This is a scared group of people. Look at what happened with the releasing of those videos, the undercover videos, and executives saying things like, "I want a Lamborghini, so, you know, let's get more money for these baby body parts." I mean, they are exposed, and the more that the light shines on the darkness and the evil behind the curtain with big abortion, the more they're going to fight back, the more they're going to try to do something retaliatory, the more they're going to try to enshrine their power and bring it all together so that they don't have to be held accountable. This is why it's so important for us to pray for the lives of these children, for the lives and the decisions that these mothers make when they are pregnant. We've also been talking about the case of Justice Roy Moore and what he's been going through, the Alabama Chief Justice, who... what a nightmare. You know, this is the problem. You stand up for real marriage, natural marriage, and you say the things that he has said, and you take the stands that he has taken. He didn't do anything wrong in this case regarding the probate judges. He didn't tell them not to follow the Obergefell ruling. And, you know, that's plain, and yet he's having to undergo this unfair treatment, being suspended from the bench there in Alabama, and not even having due process. So we have a lot to talk about. There's also a lot in the news today, the Iranian regime ransom. Oh, wait a minute. No. Not a ransom. It's not a ransom. Because the United States doesn't pay ransoms. John Kerry says so. You can keep your doctor if you like your doctor. So anything on your mind, we'll take your calls today. Let's go first to Nebraska. We've got Lance on the line wanting to talk a little bit about the Justice Moore case. So good to have you, Lance. Welcome.
Jana, for taking my call. I really appreciate your service to the Lord and to God's people and to our country, and Tony Perkins as well, and Washington Watch. I've just been thinking about how, these different situations with Justice Moore or what's going on in Illinois and, the Supreme Court decision on marriage, redefining marriage and so on. I think it's really important as believers, these attacks, even though some of us, or take for instance the bakers or photographers that are being sued and maybe they've lost their jobs and so on, or their businesses over these lawsuits, even though some of us aren't being directly impacted, obviously these are attacks on religious liberty and constitutional protections that impact all of us.
And,
I think as believers, we have to really, pray, like you said, overcome evil with good, pray, but we need to be really active in opposing these kinds of evil actions. Because, it's this fascist movement of the left that wants to, like Obama said, he wants to change America. It's his agenda to turn America into this, socialist, anti-Christian, pro-GLBT, pro-whatever. If things don't change now or soon, it's just going to be, it's going to be like a North Korea or, countries where there's just incredible oppression towards believers.
Well, that's the danger, Lance. Thank you so much for the call. That is the danger. I said I don't even know how long ago this was, but I had made a comment a while back. I said the problem with Americans is they don't see a revolution when it's occurring in front of their eyes because they've never seen one before. Now, you could talk about the sexual revolution. That was a little bit different. But when you see all of these different things occurring in the halls of government, in our courts, in the social sphere, among the activists, on the streets of places like Ferguson, there is a revolution occurring, a cultural and a social revolution occurring. And without shots fired, in most cases, it doesn't necessarily look to us like a historical version of a revolution. But in fact, you can have revolutions that don't have any violence associated with them whatsoever. It can be done through the courts. It can be done through the legal routes. And it can be done through, social movements. And that's exactly what we've been seeing happen in the last many years, but especially in the last 8 years. And you're right. We are going to be a fundamentally different country, transformed the way that President Obama vowed to transform us, if we don't stand up and fight back and get involved in our government and be at those council meetings and attend those PTA sessions. And I'm serious. We can't afford to sit home. It drives me crazy when I talk to dear, well-meaning Christians who say to me, Janet, they don't call me honey. My husband will call me honey. But my friends will say to me, for example, I just can't stand listening to the news or finding out what's going on out there. It's just so horrible. So, we just kind of hunker down and we don't watch TV and we don't turn on the radio because it's just so negative and it's so scary. And I said, but here's the thing. It's going to get more negative and it's going to get more scary if you continue to hunker down. We have a responsibility as Christians to be out there and to be salt and light. It's not just some kind of platitude that we can put on a little Bible verse card and tack it on our refrigerators. It's true. We're supposed to be salt and light, and it's high past time that we take that seriously. Thanks so much, Lance, for the call. Let's go next to Missouri, and let's talk to Lori. Lori, welcome to Washington Watch. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just totally agree with what you've been saying. I've been a Christian for a while now, but I've never felt like I do right now in terms of just the criticalness that we need to be involved, not only in voting, not only in educating our fellow Christians about how wrong it is to step back from the light, that we have to shine on some of what's going on. I really do believe we are seeing now the persecution in this agenda that's going on, with the abortion and all the things that we're fighting for that are the principles of our Christian beliefs, not even so much like the Christian beliefs, but even just what's in the Constitution. I tell you, I would encourage anybody that can to take a course or a free course on learn what's in the Constitution, because it opened my eyes to exactly how the country was founded and the principles, and that's really being swept under the rug. Lastly, I would just say, you know, Donald Trump was not my first choice either, but he's got to get in there for a lot of reasons, and you can see how important it is because of all the guff and the fight back he's getting.
Well, I'll tell you what. Yeah, I hear you on that, and I commend you for your encouraging people to read the Constitution and to understand our founding documents. And I sort of was chortling to myself as I thought that would require putting down your cell phone. You know, a lot of people don't want to do that. But seriously, thank you, Lori, for that reminder. And I echo Lori's sentiments. I think everybody needs to read the Constitution, make your kids read the Constitution, talk about the history of the Constitution, familiarize yourself with these founding documents for the greatest system of government this earth has ever seen. We have the responsibility to preserve and maintain it by the grace of God. And I thank you for the call, Lori. Let's go next to Louisiana. We've got Jeff on the line. Jeff, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to have you here.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just wanting to know, the president was on an interview with George Stephanopoulos, and he was talking about faith. And George called him in a trick bag. I don't remember exactly what the conversation was about, but the president said, my Muslim faith.
Yes.
And George corrected him on that, and he said, no, you mean your Christian faith. Okay, what I want to tell you is you can't be both. You can't be Muslim, Islam, and you can't be Christian. They don't work together. That's like water and whatever, fire and ice, whatever you want to say.
Right, right.
But we need to really recognize what's happening, because it's just like this. So I'm a Christian, and I'm not going to go against Christians. So if he's got a little Muslim in him or Islam in him, he's not going to want to fight these people. That's why he's protecting them. And I'm going to hang up and listen to y'all. I think we need to be aware of what's going on.
Well, Jeff, I appreciate the call very much. It's like being a little bit pregnant. You either are or you are not. You are either, being a Christian is binary. You're either saved by Jesus Christ through faith alone, by grace alone, because of his finished work on the cross alone and his resurrection from the dead, or you're not. You can't be a little bit of a Christian. You either are one or you aren't one. And that is true for all of us. And as far as the whole question of whether or not Barack Obama just has sympathies because of his Muslim upbringing, or because he likes the ideology from a political standpoint because it helps him, there are some similarities here or there, who knows? Who knows? But the bottom line is, even if you go back to Jeremiah Wright's church in Chicago 20 years ago, if you examine the theology in that church, that theology isn't even Christian theology. So even if there's no Muslim connection whatsoever in terms of what he actually believes, it's enough to look at the theology of Jeremiah Wright's church and say, okay, show me how biblical this is. But I appreciate that. Thank you so much for the call. All right, let's go to Texas. Let's talk to Lenny next. Hi, Lenny. You're on Washington Watch. What's on your mind? Hi, Lenny, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah, gotcha. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, actually, I wish I'd heard what you just said, because I've always wondered why people don't just come out and treat the fact is that Obama's a Muslim, and then they wouldn't be worried saying, well, how can he be so stupid? He's not stupid. But that wasn't my question. My question was, what can we display as Christians in public and actually even in private or I guess public but realms that say the conservatives have control of, for example, the Republican National Convention, why can't we display large pictures of different stages of graphic stages of abortion where we can legally, I believe we can legally do that when we have control of that space, right? Which would force some mainstream media to either address it, or we could point out how they're avoiding it. I mean, we've got to put this stuff in the reality in people's face. Otherwise, they'll continue to lie about it.
This is right. And this is one of the tactics going back to the early days of the pro-life movement. Joe Scheidler and the Pro-Life Action League in the streets of Chicago, they were the ones who first got out there and started showing those pictures of children who had been dismembered and horrible images to wake the people up and to say this is what is really going on behind the doors where women have choices, quote unquote. This is what's actually occurring. And I agree with it. I think that it can be a very effective means of waking people up. And I also think it's very important to recommend some of the pro-life movies that are very, very strongly changing people's minds. I think of a movie like The Hard Truth or Silent Scream. Those things are now on the internet. So you can pass those around to people and challenge people, as I did a number of years ago. I challenged a Jewish colleague of mine who is very pro-abortion. And I said, will you just do me one favor and watch this movie, The Hard Truth? I had a VHS tape of it and I gave it to him. And he said, yeah, I'll watch it. It's not going to change my mind. And I said, all right, well, you just watch it. You know, I just want to give it to you and see what happens. And he walked into work the next day and he handed it back to me and he said three words, I'm pro-life. And that was it. That was it. That was all it took. So sometimes a picture is worth a thousand words and images can be very effective in making pro-life arguments. And I think that that's a great idea. Thank you so much. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call if we can. We've got a caller in Virginia, Kevin. Very quickly, Kevin, you're on Washington Watch. Go ahead.
I'd just like to say that I hate to say this, but I absolutely blame the Christians in this country for the way that the country is right now, because I think it's either 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 Christians vote, and the other 4 have no say in the country anymore. They've given up their rights, and everyone is looking for St. Paul to become the president, and what we end up with is Nero. I've said it on other stations. And that's exactly what we've got.
I laugh ironically, not comically, because I agree with you. I think that we have an obligation to vote. I think we have a duty to vote. And I think it's tempting at times to say, who cares? I don't like who's on the ballot. But you're right. We're not going to get a Paul on the ballot. We never got one. We'll never get one. We're not going to get Jesus on the ballot. And I think that's such an important point that you raise, Kevin, the duty that Christians have to show up at the polls and let their voices be heard. And for the life of me, I don't know why people are so lazy. Think for a moment, Kevin, if we were to lose the right to vote. I often dream about this a little bit, not that I want it to happen, but I imagine sometimes how Christians would react if all of a sudden they woke up one morning and were told by the federal government, you can't vote anymore. How mad Christians would be, how outraged people would be, and how interesting it might be to go back to those same Christians who would be outraged and say, did you vote in the last election? Did you go down and vote for your local justices of the peace? Did you vote for your mayor? Did you vote for your council members? Did you vote for your state representative? Did you care about your sheriff? You know what I'm saying? All of a sudden, if it were to be gone, you would miss it. And I think that's something that every Christian needs to keep in mind as we head into this election season. It is a very difficult time for a lot of us, because a lot of us would say we want a Reagan again. We want somebody who is really a strong constitutional conservative, who is a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ, who will rule this, I shouldn't say rule, serve this country the way a president should. And yet you get what you have. And so this is where Christian liberty, Christian conscience, great study, great debate, and great amounts of thought and prayer should go into whatever you do. But I don't think it's an option to stay home. Just my opinion. I'm going to be with you again tomorrow here on Washington Watch. Janet Mefford, so good being with you here. And we appreciate you listening to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. We'll see you again tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening here on American Family Radio. Have a great night.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.